Well, good evening, everybody. And we are this week, a very full week. Not that I always know what's coming next. I just do what my guides tell me what to do to keep my wheels on the railroad tracks here. This is our continuation with the science of triangles. And apparently we have ended, we've ended program 105 now. BL and Michael, just correct me if it looks like I'm going off the rails. Okay. And starting program 106 on this first day of December 2021. And of course, we're now in the Advent season, looking forward with great anticipation, as only Sagittarius does, for the increasing, for the birth of the Christ in our hearts, or the coming into our consciousness of the mind as it is in Christ. Because we have to say what this will mean for us, this idea of the Advent. I think if you either received, or I'm sure you received it, our preparation, we had the first Sunday in Advent, and apparently there are four, and four candles represented those four Sundays. Now, let's just say that if we are dedicated students, we will be working persistently to bring our consciousness into that Christ-like condition. And there are quite a number of the stations, we might say, of the Christ consciousness. Now, around the first initiation is where I figure we have to be, at least, and maybe quite probably, if we're really sincere and continuous, we may have taken that first initiation, which is no small matter. I used to think that I thought wrongly, that many people had taken the first initiation when they were really nowhere near that stage. They did not have the complete opening of the fifth petal of the egoic lotus. They were still struggling with personalism. With the beginning stages of aspiration. And a little bit later, of course, I don't know how many lives it takes exactly. I don't think anybody knows how many lives, that there should be a rule that's exactly the same for everybody. But when the fifth petal is open, they have taken that initiation, and DK tells us that we want to beautify our life, and that spirituality really means something to us, and that somehow we are students of at least we're serving, you know, and that serving, helping others, lifting others, is a really big part of our lives. Now you can measure yourself against certain standards, let us say, and you can kind of determine whether, you know, you stand there, you're in the process, or you have passed the process. People are ambitious for their personalities. They have to be more ambitious for the spread of the great teaching and the elevation of humanity, and then that will be a good sign. Okay, well, I want to welcome those of you who have managed to come, and certainly my host and co-host here, Michael and BL, and then it's nice to see a number of you. I want to say hi to Martha. It seems like it's been a little while, but hi, Martha. Glad to see you. And Anne and Annette and Francois and Georgina, welcome. And Joan Schofield, welcome to you. I'm just kind of going through the list here. Mariana from Sweden, welcome. And Mayra Santos, welcome to you, Mayra. And Nasa, hi, welcome to you. And Nienka, also welcome. And Odile Goyer, welcome, Odile. And Tia, hi. And Yvonne Winiger and Winnie, yeah. Good to see you all. Some of you I see quite frequently on different programs, and others, yeah, you show up, I'm sure, when you can. Okay. Now, we're looking at various triangles. You see, let's see, make sure that this is what you see. Yeah. You see triangles under 15. And what does it mean to you when you see this triangle? One of the nine major triangles affecting consciousness in this cycle. And by the way, I assume we are recording. Yes, we are. Okay. What does it mean to you? You see. Now, we'll go to the place in the book. And always, you know, my gratitude to Starling David Hunter, who has made the triangles work, the preeminent piece of his spiritual work. And he's kind of sharing his collection here with us, which benefits us. Okay. And I hope I didn't forget anybody when I was listing the names, okay? But when you see Taurus, Scorpio, and Capricorn, well, to me, it means, in a way, desire, testing through the processes of learning to be humble, and also it indicates, believe it or not, illumination. Now, you know, I probably repeat some of these things, but whether or not you absorb them or whether they stay in my mind is a question. And when you're looking at the meditative sequence that begins with Leo and concentration, by the time we get to Scorpio, The watchword is illumination, usually considered a sign of darkness. Instead, it brings in the light, and especially the light of the Buddhic plane, which is the plane where on our human monads are gathered for labor. As members of the fourth creative hierarchy. You can number it number four, you can number it number nine. And carrying even further this attitude of humility, along with the possibility of true initiation, comes the sign Capricorn. Now, maybe you remember, but Capricorn finds itself active at all of the first five initiations, starting with the birth of the Christ in the heart. And for the second initiation, which is usually the Scorpionic initiation, the Capricorn part of it is the one who crosses the water. And that's fairly obvious as one masters the astral plane and moves towards a more independent mind. The third initiation is traditionally the great initial illumination of the third degree. We call it the transfiguration. And when we come to the fourth degree, Capricorn is allowing the monad and the spiritual triad to become more influential. And I suppose at the fifth degree, we find the liberation which began at the fourth degree. We become liberated into the monad at the fourth degree. At least we're on the way, and Capricorn is a further liberation in relation to that. That's what I would say when I look at those things, just as they stand. Now, if I were to go to page 495, where I seem to be, okay, well, here he's been talking about the three air signs, which will be so powerful.
Michael,
Yes? Oh, yeah,
we're
that's
still
right.
seeing starlings, not the EA 495.
Thank you. See how easy it is to forget and go off the tracks. Now I assume you see it. I hope.
Yes, thank you.
Okay. We see the three air signs, which are going to be so powerful during an age of air. Now, Aquarius is an air sign, which automatically brings in the triangle involving the other two of the air signs, and they have to do with the representation of the Lords of Liberation. Liberty in Aquarius, equality in Libra, fraternity in Gemini. But actually, in terms of order, it is the second decanate, that is ruled by Fraternity or Gemini, and the third, which is the age of brotherhood, ruled by Libra. And there we have the Libran quality of Libran quality of equality. So we are understanding the brotherhood, sisterhood of humanity by the time we reach that in the third decanate. Now, what would you expect? We're in another 2,000 or so years. Excuse me. We will be coming into an Earth sign. It will still be under a 25,000, almost 26,000 great Platonic year under air, because that's how long the next great Platonic year will last, and it will be under the representation of it will be under the representation of Aquarius. But in the middle of all that comes the age of Capricorn, which is just a normal equinoctial age of approximately, I mean, we don't have the real figures, but approximately 2160 years. What would you expect would happen using this particular method of analysis? Well, it will be the age of Capricorn. The Christ and the Buddha will have moved on, having taken the seventh initiation, and they will be trained in some place for their stellar destination. But naturally enough, the other two Earth signs will be pulled into the mix. And along then with Capricorn, we will have the Christ consciousness of Virgo and the desire changing to illumination of Taurus. Now, exactly what order they will be in. Let's see if we went forward from Capricorn. We would find Taurus in the second place and Virgo in the third place. So it would be the reorientation of desire and the Christ-like life would finally be produced, all under the guidance of Capricorn, the great sign of initiation. And I would imagine that many initiates of the third degree, even more than you will find in our upcoming Aquarian equinoctial age, will be made in the Capricornian period, some 2,000 plus years ahead. You can see that the hierarchy has long-term plans, and they plan in terms of inevitable cycles about which they know a lot more than we do, because they have what is called, with respect to our Earth at least, they have what is called all knowledge. And that knowledge has to do with the cycles as they affect our particular planet. They don't have yet all knowledge with regard to this, to our solar system, or even with regard to the other planets, and especially the sacred planets, etc. Or they certainly don't have all knowledge with regard to the cosmic logos, in which our solar logos is a great heart center. So we have to relativize or interpret in a relative manner this term, all knowledge. Now, looking at 495, and going back to what is stated earlier, that we should go to this page in order to elaborate on a triangle called Taurus, Scorpio, and Capricorn, a bit more is said here that may help to guide us. And, you know, all I can say is the new way of thinking, and it was new for us, and the way the hierarchy thinks when they look at our etheric body, or maybe they look at the progress of humanity in general, etc., they think in terms of triangles. So, you know, our question is, and it won't take place immediately, can we learn to think in terms of triangles? So I'm just going to shoot over here for myself for a second. And yeah, this is all about Taurus, Scorpio, and Capricorn. Right. I didn't have to show that to you because we saw it just a minute ago. I'm just confirming for myself where we were. Now, so in this triangle, this is the way the Tibetan interprets the triangle. And maybe, you know, put yourself always to the test of a detached and illumined mind, which can interpret your situation. First comes Taurus. The Tibetan calls it desire. Now, at first, it is desire around the time of the Waisak festival. Taurus becomes a tremendous illumination from Shambhala, and has to do with the greatest light. You know, when we use the second ray, word of power, there are seven words of power, you know, they are found in the antikaranic section of the rays and the initiations. When you say, I see the greatest light, you're not just talking about the second ray, you're also talking about Taurus. So, the incentive to evolutionary unfoldment in the human kingdom. Under early Taurus, we desire to rise and to accumulate what can be gathered by us, which will bring us into a more elevated condition. Now, everybody who is subject to desire thinks that if they fulfill that desire, they will be in a higher position. Often, however, that is not the case, and oftentimes that fulfillment is of a selfish, personal kind, which in fact restricts the possibility of elevation. But let's just say, as the Tibetan said, we have a driving prompting to rise in what is called evolutionary unfoldment, and we have some kind of idea about what that may entail, and that we are not necessarily totally selfish personal beings, the way so many millions are at this time, and maybe even billions. The next sign in this triangle is Scorpio, and very interesting that it is associated with aspiration, which is a definite kind of elevation or elevatory movement. In other words, you know you're going higher. And how do you know? Well, there are great tests to be found in Scorpio, and probably you will recognize this for yourself. This particular sign, which has so much to do with what is called the light of day and the Buddhic plane whereon monadically we work, this particular sign tests us, puts us through tests and trials until we triumph. Now, do you feel that you have been tested, are in the middle of a test, have triumphed as a result of a test? Maybe you're in one of those positions. And maybe it's not only because you have Scorpio in your chart. You will always, as certain factors move in the progressing chart, there will come Scorpio periods, provided you live at least to be 27 or 28 years old. The moon will find its position in Scorpio, and during such periods, a peculiar testing does occur. DK sometimes refers to these as the terrific tests of Scorpio. So, what is developed there is a struggle, and strength comes as a result of the struggle, and Sagittarian attitudes are developed there as well. So struggle, strength, and Sagittarian attitudes. Test, trial, and triumph, let's see, what did I just say? Sagittarian attitudes do unfold as we go further, and those are definitely inspiring. Our aspiration has been met by inspiration. Now, in this triangle, Capricorn comes next. And we know that in many ways, Aquarius is a sign of liberation on the fixed cross. So, you know, think about the fixed cross for just a moment. Now, no way around it, friends. You're going to have to memorize your astrological signs. You must memorize them. We have the blinding light of Taurus, the fiery pain of Leo, the bitter woe of Scorpio, and the liberation of Aquarius. So he uses this word liberation in this case to represent Capricorn. Why does he do that? Well, it certainly does fit on the fixed cross, but as you know, Capricorn is on what cross? Not the fixed. It's on the cardinal cross. And desire has led through the earnest intention, emotion, to improve, and it has led to the light. And what is the light? The light is the light of initiation and the liberation of the initiate. When does that liberation really begin to occur? And would you not say it begins to occur at the transfiguration initiation? The third, which it is best for us to assume we have not taken, but our intent on realizing a direction towards it. So this triangle gives us incentive for unfoldment, testing, test, trial, triumph, struggle, strength, and Sagittarian attitudes, and then finally liberation. Why is there liberation here? Because we can stand apart from our personality and see it in a higher light that comes to us from the mountaintop. So this is one way to, you know, I just offer to you my own interpretations, and I mix and blend them to a degree with what the Tibetan has said. Whether I do this successfully or not, well, I try, and that's all that any of us can really do. Now, here's another triangle. Let's see, Sagittarius, Cancer, Leo. And, well, that triangle is not listed. That triangle is not listed. I just flashed back there for a minute and took a look, but it's an important one. And so he's adding to the air sign triangle this first triangle, and if we were to just be very quick about it, we would have Sagittarius, which always gives the sense of direction, and we would move towards Cancer. It is moving, well, I guess we'd have to say it is moving counterclockwise. Otherwise, Leo would not follow cancer. But cancer plunges you into incarnation, where you have experience. Now later, there is a oneness and a wholeness which is realized in cancer. And the famous mantra there is the following: the whole is seen as one. But right now we're simply talking about the experience of incarnation, whereby various realizations begin to gather. And finally, we get to Leo, which augments self-consciousness, whomever it affects. And that is the mode of development. We get to know ourselves better and better. But we'll come to that triangle in time, so I just made short work of it. There are other major triangles which are called triangles in consciousness. And as you well know, the most important of these, notice how he qualifies, for mankind, is the triangle of Cancer, Leo, and Aquarius. Well, maybe we're not quite there yet, but by now you have enough experience to know that Cancer is mass consciousness, oftentimes unconsciously originating with a kind of instinctual telepathy. So you have the consciousness of the herd, and you don't even know why you think as you think and believe as you believe. It is not, it's something completely shared by others at that lower stage of evolution, like yourself, when you are at that stage. But then comes Leo, which individualizes the consciousness. And then you become uniquely yourself. Now, we could go way back into Lemurian times of individualization, and we could follow Cancer and Leo, and it would take a long time before we finally got to true group consciousness in Aquarius, which is liberative consciousness. You know, as you, when you have time, and as you begin to read carefully esoteric astrology, and as you know, I've done a video book quite meticulously on esoteric astrology, you'll realize that the whole thing is just filled with triangles and their implications. Long before we get to the section about the study of triangles, there they are. And it's just that we have passed over them and have not thought about them with care. Now, if I go back, the next one talks about paramount signs of influence, and it's on esoteric astrology, page 52. Now let's go there and see what we might see. And Well, something really interesting is here. The paramount signs of influence, we have Aries, Pisces, winding up in Taurus, and that is the clockwise version, the counterclockwise version of the average man. From Aries to Pisces, through all the signs, until it stops in Taurus, and there is a refocusing of desire. So it goes from Aries to Pisces via Taurus. And let's see. It says here, Scorpio and Capricorn, instead of moving from Aries to Taurus via Sagittarius, Leo, and Cancer. So, Sagittarius, Leo, and Cancer. And I think I started to talk about that earlier. I think so. Is also a paramount triangle of interest. The triplicity of constellations mentioned in these two great routes around the zodiac have a definite momentous effect and are called paramount signs of interest or influence, paramount signs of influence. I'm going to just kind of put that in. Okay. And one seems to I think, I did incorrectly here. The first of the triangles is counterclockwise. Aries finally to Pisces via Taurus, and going through the strengthening and testing of Scorpio and the initiation of Capricorn. So that first movement that we call Aries, Taurus, Pisces is the counterclockwise movement. The second movement is the counterclockwise. There you find yourself finally in Taurus after you have the Sagittarius and Leo experience. Now, that's very interesting because in Sagittarius, the arrows of solar angelic being shot forth into animal man. And it took a long time for him to realize this and come to himself in Leo, maybe 3 million years later. And then he ends up in Cancer, in this particular case, taking incarnation as a result of the intervention of the solar angels or angel of the presence. And then he probably goes around and around clockwise in a similar manner. Now look, we've been all through this, you and I. Long time ago, we were animal man. We looked very different than now we look. We may have been animal man, individualizing in Lemuria, or upon the moon chain, or even some of us in the previous major solar system. But we had to learn how not to continue to reinforce our lower desires, but to elevate our desires through aspiration, which eventually would lead to initiation and thus liberation. And what does DK say here about this process? During this process, the mental principle, the discriminating mind, is developed, and in this specific connection, not in a general connection, the emphasis is laid upon the influence of first three signs, Aries, Gemini, and Libra. Not the first three signs, but the first three together in a counterclockwise manner. What would we get from Aries, Gemini, and Libra? Well, we would get beginnings, and we would get interplay between the higher of the pairs of opposites and the lower. Remember, they are vertical. And finally, we would get a balanced condition in which fateful decisions are made and true right human relations can be established under the Prince of Peace. Now, the Christ was probably not in those early days. He was not the Prince of Peace. He was not the head of the hierarchy. Some other great figure had to have been the head of the hierarchy, because the Christ only became the head of the hierarchy when the Buddha relinquished the task to him around the year 500 BC. But still, there is the possibility of a true right relationship between one man and another, one group and another, and one geographical relationship and another. Under that influence, the man learns, says the Tibetan, to overcome desire through experiment with and experience of every kind of desire and selfish impulse. We kind of exhaust desire. And when we have exhausted desire, we are really ready for aspiration. Thus, gradually, the Tibetan goes on to say, and with, infinite pain, the human soul learns to function first as a member of the human family, and secondly, as a spiritual entity, the divine soul. So once aspiration has truly begun, that is the direction. I don't know how much. I just want to read one more thing. Well, this is important, so I'll read two more things. You will see from the above that certain positions taken by the esoteric astrologer reverse the position of the orthodox astrology of today. Now, usually, in the orthodox astrology of today, if you look at the sun, moon, and rising sign, the sun is considered most important because people are functioning largely as personalities. And the moon, of course, has to do with the different personality vehicles, and the rising sign is not considered to be a sign of elevation. And in a minute, we'll just take a look of how it is. It's considered to be secondary to the sun sign in that triangle, because people just don't get it yet, what it means to be living as a soul toward which the rising sign would direct you. So obviously, when you have a choice in that triangle, you don't want the repetitive motion of the moon. You don't want the self-centered attitude of the sun sign. You want something else coming from the rising sign. So all of this is the reason for this is that in the descent of ideas from the plane of ideas, and what plane is that? You should know. It is at least the Buddhic plane and beyond, right? These ideas, they become reversed upon the astral plane. And may I suggest, this is called the astral inversion. Things are turned upside down, and people interpret things utterly backwards and not according to truth. So they become reversed upon the astral plane and subject to the great illusion. Now, astrology says the Tibetan must eventually free itself from this reversal, and when energies come to us, they must be in proper order and without this kind of inversion which we see so much today, just fanciful glamours and illusory interpretations. But this is particularly what I want you to have in your mind. A right understanding of the effect of the various energies and forces, and you're not going to get that when you have the reversal and the illusions. So a right understanding will make it apparent that when the, now listen carefully here, it always struck me as important, when the conditioning planetary forces, notice how he gives them kind of a, he names each category. The conditioning planetary forces, the expanding energies of the sun sign, and the driving energy of the rising sign, that's the triangle, conditioning planets, expanding sun sign, driving energy of the rising sign, are all being controlled and directed by the illumined spiritual man, And I suppose by that time it means the initiate of the third degree. You will have a soul upon the very verge of liberation. So please, there at the end of page 52, somehow bring that paragraph into your thoughts. Planetary energies, condition. Sun sign energies expand, and rising sign energies drive forward. Now, do you know the manner in which your rising sign energies, and hopefully we all have or can get a fairly accurate astrological chart, so we know what the rising sign will be. No problem with the sun and moon sign. You were born on a certain day, and usually the sun and the moon will be easy to locate, or the sun and the other planets. But do you know when it comes to the rising sign, whether you are using that in terms of driving you closer to the center of your life? Towards soul illumination, and eventually towards liberation, whether it occur in Capricorn or whether it occurs in Aquarius. Those are the two likely signs. And for a few very sacrificial types, it will occur in Pisces. Do you know? If you look at your chart and all of those planets, plus the moon, your sun sign, which is called the potency of the sun of probability, meaning probably you're going to live according to your sun sign, most people do, and the rising sign is higher, called the potency of the sun of possibility. So are we really living in these triangles that I'm just pointing out, our driving energies of the rising sign? And sometimes they are very different from the sun sign, very different. And as a result, conflict enters the life between the rising sign and the more probable living according to the sun sign. Okay. Well, that's probably all I'm going to speak of right there. Let's see, want to make sure I do this correctly. I assume that BL and Michael, you see Taurus, Scorpio, and Capricorn. And
yes.
Yeah, you see it. Okay.
And then, well, 16, Taurus, Scorpio, and Pisces.
Right. Did I do that? Maybe not.
No, not yet.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I think that's where you're headed, though, right?
Well, in a way, except time is passing because I went into considerable detail otherwise. So what does it say here? Taurus, Scorpio, Pisces. Well, it's very similar. And to end in Pisces, let's see, how would that be done? Well, Taurus, to Pisces, it looks like a clockwise kind of movement, because Pisces follows Taurus. It's one of the nine major triangles affecting consciousness in this cycle. Number three, what does it say here? Triangle of initiations, strength and illumination, and love in full expression. So, which will be which? I tell you what, I almost hesitate to get into that too much, but if we turn to 486 and 487,
Michael,
yeah.
sorry, if you don't want to get into that, you have a couple of questions here about what you've already said.
Yeah, well, we've been going about an hour, haven't we? About.
Yes.
And I don't know how complicated I want to make all this, but yeah, I will in just a second. I kind of want to see what it is all about. 486 and 486 and 7. So let me just go here, and I know I haven't shown it to you yet. 486 and 7. And 7. It looks like I've dealt with this a little bit. Okay, well, I'll just say one brief thing, that these three signs, Scorpio, Taurus, and Pisces, whatever order they may be in, do you recognize them as the three cosmic decanates in which one of our outstanding teachers found himself at a certain point in the evolutionary process? So he says, testing, trial and desire, illumination, matter form, and salvation are the keynotes of our solar system and our Earth in particular. So all of these signs cover that, but also, Scorpio is the cosmic decanate of Hercules, a great first-ray teacher and dramatist in Atlantean times. Taurus is the cosmic decanate of the Buddha, a great teacher of wisdom, with a third-ray monad, but if we go still further, we're going to find the second ray for the liberated monad. I'm quite convinced you have a choice of Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, three circles, and for the liberated monad, and I'm convinced that for the Buddha, though he has the second, the third ray monad, along with 8 or 9 others on this planet, you will find the second ray. And then with Pisces, it is the cosmic decanate of the Christ. So that's why it is that, or at least this represents the fact that the second aspect of divinity is emphasized in these three cosmic decanates. Well, we'll get to that when necessary. Here it tells us, Hercules, strength through testing, okay, but more in terms of who the real man was. Buddha via Taurus, illumination through struggle. Now, remember Taurus and the ordinary mantram of Taurus. Let struggle be undismayed. And I suppose it's the struggle between ordinary desire and the height of spiritual aspiration attained in Taurus. Heights of spiritual aspiration are attained in Taurus. With the Christ, finally, not just the whale swallowing Jonah, but sort of Jonah swallowing the whale. It's resurrection through sacrifice. A very important triangle. I think all you can do is to collect in your mind different triangles which impress you and which seem meaningful to you. You will find triangles of all kinds. You will find three planets, three signs of the zodiac or constellations, three rays, or you may find a sign of the zodiac and two planets, or two signs of the zodiac and one planet, or you may find a particular ray and a sign of the zodiac and a planet. There's all kinds of arrangements that are hiding, as it were, from the non-observant reader, and they're scattered throughout the books. Now, the important thing is, of course, to recognize what is meaningful to you. And just looking at your astrological chart, there are a number of triangles which always could be meaningful to you. The rising sign, sun sign, and moon sign, or there can be the rising sign, sun sign, and the planetary positions accompanied by the moon, or there could be the ascendant, the descendant, and probably the sun sign, and maybe one of the highest triangles that you can find in your chart, when the day comes, will be the sun sign, the rising sign, and the point opposite the sun sign, which will bring in, if you are at that stage of evolution, the monadic influence. So I can't help that this is a rather intricate study. It is that. But you will progress in it if you are patient and, you know, begin to anchor the meaning of some of the more important triangles. So that, let's say we had like a quiz on these things at some point. I would give you a triangle and you would write down your interpretation of the triangle on the basis of your studies over, well, over years, really. But finally, the monad does show up in the astrological chart, but it will not represent the monad unless you have, let's say, taken the third initiation or are very close to it. Then the possibility exists that in the chart the monad will emerge as significant. Okay, well, I'm not going to go any further now with this, for obvious reasons. And just to say, I think I can, maybe you guide me with this, Sabiel. This is what I just did. So we ended today, is that correct? End of program 106, and today is the 1st of December. Sorry. And when's our next start on this, BL?
Sorry, I don't know. It is not in December. And this, hold on just a minute. It's not on the calendar because of the Advent stuff and
I know
all of that. So this was program 106 that you did today.
Yeah. Okay. That's good.
And then 107 will be January sometime.
Okay, so I'll just put XX January. And probably it will be the same time. You know, when Christmas comes,
2022.
We have a lot of extra things going on, so all right. Now let's take a look and see what people commented on or questioned.
Okay. Yvonne says, can you talk some more about the importance of the fifth petal of the egoic lotus being open or closed?
Yeah, Yvonne, I think that is a very important question. The fifth petal is such a petal of struggle and emergence. It begins in the early days of its opening. It begins as the scene of selfishness, and we might call it egotism, in our language. The word ego, of course, means something different for DK, but we're going to say personalism. Then the egotist, the personalist, falls from the tower, falls down and hits the ground. It's called the Blasted Tower. Now, where do you find that? If you look at the tarot, a trump cards, I'm not sure exactly which trump, the funny trump, but which trump the Blasted Tower represents. Maybe someone who knows the tarot can, you know, throw that in. It's not Trump 17, and it's not the death card.
The tower is 16.
16, right before what's called the star. And by the way, a little piece of politics thrown in with all the rest. I believe that Trump himself, the former man, is facing the experience of the tower, which brings, and it'll be a hard bring, it brings humility. If there is any kind of sensitivity at all, because there's a lot of suffering. From the time that the individual falls from the tower and hits bottom, as we say, you know, in the AA description of the 12-step process, you've got to really hit bottom before you can begin to ascend. The possibility of becoming an aspirant begins to develop during the remainder of the fifth petal process. And it goes on and on until the fifth petal is completely open, which signals the taking of the first initiation. When the sixth petal is completely open, it signals the taking of the seventh initiation. And in the mental petals or sacrifice petals, there is also some corresponding development. The seventh petal is developing when the fifth petal is opening and completely open. The eighth petal is developing when the sixth petal is opening or completely opened. And then it's all quite fast, the unfoldment of those last three petals. Now, at the same time, there's a heck of a struggle going on in that fifth petal. Because, okay, it's a Leo petal. How do I get that? I just count in order. First Aries, second Taurus, third Gemini, fourth Cancer, fifth Leo. But from another point of view, it's one of the love petals. And the love petals begin with water. They always go in the order, cardinal, fixed, and mutable. You know, just the earth petals were Capricorn cardinal, Taurus fixed, and Virgo mutable. Now we go into water in the second circle of petals that we call the love petals. And we start with Cancer, cardinal, Scorpio, fixed, and Pisces, mutable, with all the sacrifice implied. So now we have two really tough signs working together in that fifth petal. we have Leo moving towards the first initiation. You know, and I think we all, well, we all know at the presently, that Leo is one of the signs most implicated in the taking of the first initiation. He talks about that in various places. Scorpio is also involved in the first three initiations, but especially the second. And Scorpio and Leo are in what kind of relationship to each other? They are square, 90 degrees apart. And that means there will be a battle against egotism until at length the fifth petal really begins to shine and the illuminative potentials of Scorpio begin to come out. But that's a struggle, and it's going to take some number of lives to get there. We know, or we've been told, you know, I never know quite what to say. When I say we know, well, at least we've been told that the time span between the first and second initiation can be significantly long. Now, you know, we use the birth of Jesus as an example. It was some 30 something years, about 30 years between the birth and the baptism. Now, the birth is the first initiation, the baptism the second. And then, at that point in his life, everything unfolded very rapidly, and the Christ was appearing through him in the vehicle of Jesus. So, you know, one day, DK says, the gold and the silver threads will be disentangled, and we'll know when the great general Jesus spoke and when it was the Christ who was speaking using the vehicle of Jesus. The great teachings that we have are coming from the Christ using the vehicle. So let's just say that that middlemost petal of the nine is a position of great conflict, leading eventually to triumph, to victory, to radiation of a greater light that starts with real initiation. I hope that gives an idea which can be significant as we think about these things. Okay.
All right, and the next one is from Anne. She says, Michael, what is your interpretation of the moon being conjunct the rising sign in a natal chart?
The old and the new are very similar. You're going through some old habit pattern, but on a much higher turn of the spiral, if you can manage it. So basically, you don't just keep going in, now, motion will tell us, not rotary motion of the moon, which is repetitive and confining, and which basically veils the true nature of a number of planets, but driving energies, much different from rotary motion. The driving energies of the rising sign, which will maybe take similar themes as were involved with the moon and elevate them to a much higher position. So it's really saying, do what you can to overcome the past and push ahead with those driving energies so that rotary motion no longer holds you in prison, because the moon is called the prison of the soul. So it's the distant past, or at least the past, compared with the potential possible future of a more spiritual nature. Okay,
and then,
And then
Mary says, can you give me an example of a triangle involving a planet, a sign, and a ray?
Let's see if I can. Well, somewhere in the book there will be. Let's see, which will come first? Let's say that we go to the period of brotherly love in the Aquarian age. The ray is the second ray of love wisdom, because it is a brotherly sisterly love, finally. The sign is Libra, because we go in order in this way, Aquarius, Gemini, Libra. With the Lords of Liberation, we call it liberty, fraternity, equality. And the planet will be Venus. It will be a decanate ruled by Venus. A decanate is lasting about 720 years in an equinoctial age. The second decanate will be a Mercury decanate. And watch out, all of us, the first decanate in general is the Saturn decanate, and into that everybody is entering. I don't want to get too complicated here, but in a subtle sense, some people are going into the Aquarian age via Venus, but it is not the general rule. If we look at the major ruler of the first decanate, and you know, Saturn is one of the rulers of Aquarius. In old astrology, you know that. So Saturn rules Aquarius, Mercury rules Gemini, and Venus rules Libra. So an example of a triangle there is the second ray of right human relations, the sign Libra of peace, and the planet Venus, which means we're coming. It's also very Syrian in nature. It carries the Christ influence, and will be significant during the last, that triangle will be significant during the last 720 years of the shorter Aquarian age. Remember, we're also we are finishing up. We don't know exactly when. He says, our science cannot determine this, but we're finishing up a 25,000-26,000 year age of Pisces, not just a little age of Pisces, a big Platonic year, ready to start the big Platonic year of Aquarius. But I'm talking about a subsection when we will have big Aquarius and little or equinoctial Aquarius of about 2,160 years, of which one third makes 720. Now, I'm under no illusion that these figures are exactly correct. DK says, look, I'm not giving you the mathematics of all this, but he's making some general statements. And so that's one triangle I would recommend to think about. And maybe another one would be a Sirius Scorpio Mars, which he talks about is important for entrance into the hierarchy. So if we look and we think, we can find a number of those that represent a triple level, a constellation, let's say, a super constellation like Sirius, a or ordinary constellation, and a planet. That's coming from three different levels. Another one would be, let's see, how does it go? Pleiades, Cancer, and what goes with that? Well, that is another one. And if I could just think of it at the moment. And we have also one where Leo is involved, and where Jupiter is involved, and one more factor. I'm forgetting the other factor. But to find triples at representing different categories of participants can be done. The one that I'm talking about it will definitely occur. Yeah, we'd have to go digging, but they exist. Okay. Anything else?
A couple of thank yous, but that's all I see in the way of questions.
Okay, friends. I think tomorrow we have the Identify as Being, Seeds of the Infinite, you know. It's the new book that is writing me. I hope I get to somehow finish that book. It's never finished, of course, because it's about the infinite. You know, sometimes people have an idea that the infinite is just a big number, but it isn't. If there's any definite number ever given, it is not the infinite. The infinite is always more than any number which can be given, especially the absolute infinite, which is beyond any solar system. So we have to refine our language here so that when we use a word like infinite, it really means infinite. And when we use a word like absolute infinitude, it's way beyond any particular infinitude. In it are all the possible infinitudes. So, you know, that kind of gets into higher math and higher math not alone, but with metaphysical implications. And that's where mathematicians are not willing to go. And we who are willing maybe to go there are not the mathematicians. They have all kinds of ways of thinking about the infinite, which maybe we would have difficulty following. So it's a bit of it's an area which is requiring a lot of abstract thought and eventual pure reason and intuition. Okay, so I think it's then Seeds of the Infinite and Identify as Being tomorrow night at the same time. And so BL will have this, and Harold will, with Joe, they'll put this particular program up on YouTube if you want to study it further. And it'll be sent out by Michael Crow also to a group that receives it in a different format that has the text at the side. Sometimes that complicates things a little bit because the speaking function doesn't necessarily pick up the words that I'm saying, or at least all the words, but some people like to have that on the side, and maybe it comes to you also. So plenty is coming your way. Just try to reserve enough time for your studies so that, you know, you can advance in that manner. And of course, deepen your meditations and render your service more effective. So all of us here on the communications team, Biel, Michael, Mikhail, that is, Joe, Harold, Michael, Stacy, Frederick's been helping us a lot, Olivia is in there too, with certain of these programs, and Tuya and myself. We wish you good assimilation of the material. There's not too much time left. The era of the forerunner is almost complete, and only less than 4 years exists, and that forerunning era, it will be complete in one respect, and maybe it will continue in another way until the year 2117, but it's usually considered to be 1965 to 2025, the era of the forerunner. And that's what we are individually and as a group. And we wish you every possible efficiency in dealing with this great material that DK is offering to us. So I'll tell you what I'll do. Maybe Michael Crow, I can talk to you just a little bit afterwards. I won't go away, but I will stop the recording, and then, you know, if you're there tomorrow night, well, we'll take up another subject. It's our night. It's not necessarily night night for you, but we'll keep moving forward. Okay, so now I stop the recording, and Michael Crow will remain for a little conversation with me, if he's still here now, which I think, yes, there he is. Okay.
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, here goes now.